Welcome to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your host, Jazz, but before that, let's listen to the quote of the week.
Look, first step that leads to our identity in life is usually not, I know who I am, I know who I am. That's not the first step. The first step's usually, I know who I am not. Process of elimination. Defining ourselves by what we are not is the first step that leads us to really knowing who we are.
Welcome to the show once again, listeners. We've got our repeated guest back on the show today, John. John has been a little bit popular lately with some of his predictions. But before we get into predictions, let's welcome John. John, welcome to the show, buddy, once again.
Jazz, mate, good to be here. So much to talk about. I'm really excited about the podcast today.
The whole reason of bringing you back is that you nailed your last prediction on the gold.
Yeah, look, it was a huge month. You know, when we spoke about 30 days ago, and in that conversation, you said, oh, where do you think gold will get to? And I said, look, you know, who knows, but I think it'll get to 1900 by the end of the year. And I didn't think it would get to 1900 by, you know, the end of the month. So it's gone crazy. I mean, the talk of the town is really silver. So let's talk a bit about that. Gold is up as well, but there's a lot of inflation triggers went a bit haywire in the last month, but in particular in the last week. So lots happening in precious metals.
So let's start with silver in that case. So silver's obviously done pretty well as well. I think it's sitting at roughly about $22 or thereabouts.
Yeah, 23. Yep.
What's causing silver to shoot up, or the commodities in general, gold and silver?
Yeah, right. So loads of macro things have happened in the last couple of weeks. So there's like a macro story which has affected all the metals and all the commodities, generally speaking. And then you've got what's happened to silver in particular. So if we look at gold and silver as a category, what happened to precious metals? And a lot happened in the last week. So the first thing is, of course, that the pandemic took a turn for the worse. Mm-hmm. So there's that fear trade that's back. There's an expectation of a second phase of lockdowns in Melbourne, but in the US as well. Mm-hmm. And what it did was sort of alert investors to there may not be an end in sight to this. Mm-hmm. But the thing about, from a precious metals investing perspective, it's not so much that the economy is in lockdown. The main thing is that the response to the lockdown is stimulus, which is the second part of the answer, which is that there's going to be stimulus as far as the eye can see, and investors are starting to wake up to this. Mm-hmm. But it's not really stimulus. I mean, stimulus is when you insert some productivity into the economy and everyone gets a new computer and everyone becomes more productive. That's mm-hmm. not really what's happening. What's happening is that the central banks are just printing up currency and putting that into the economy. So mm-hmm. we hope we don't realize that we're getting poorer. Mm-hmm. So it's just currency creation, but it's not wealth creation. So they're mm-hmm. printing money into oblivion, and that's the other big sort of reckoning. Mm-hmm. In Europe, you've got negative rates, you've got negative bond rates. And so if you compare a negative yielding instrument to gold, which has zero yield, mm-hmm. gold suddenly looks like it's got yield, or at least it's got yield compared to something with negative yield, right? So mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, people are flocking into gold as an alternative to bonds and treasury and debt instruments. Mm-hmm. The last couple of days has been geopolitical mm-hmm. strife. You've got the U.S. Shut down a Chinese embassy in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And only a couple of hours ago today, you've got the Chinese retaliating with the shutdown of a Chinese embassy in Chengdu. So, mm-hmm. you know, loads going on. And there's another little thing, and this is kind of the last point about what happened in the last month. Mm-hmm. Trump nominated a new seat to the Fed, mm-hmm. Someone named Judy Shelton. Now, Judy Shelton was nominated in 2019, but she was ratified by the Senate during the week. Now, mm-hmm. people get nominated to the Fed all the time, but Judy Shelton is a gold standard advocate. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense that, you know, the wind is shifting a little bit in terms of like where the intellectual thinking is going, mm-hmm. And it's going back towards like hard currencies, real commodity money, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So, yeah, loads happened. Mm-hmm. So that's the macro picture. And in terms of like silver in particular, right? So silver went up 27% in the last month, which is nuts. And it's actually, if I look at my phone now, it's moving up as we speak. Mm-hmm. So it's coming up again.
Sorry to cut you in, John.
Yeah, but go for it.
I get gold. Gold is considered as a hedge against inflation and all the QE, right? So totally get gold going up. But silver is more of a commodity which is used in various products. But the demand for those products in this current environment isn't really that high. I mean, the supply and demand both have disappeared because of the COVID. So why silver specifically? Or is this just cyclical because gold has gone up? Silver's starting to move up too.
Yeah, it's really that last thing you said. So silver responds to monetary stimulus just with a lag. So what normally happens is gold responds first and silver responds later and sharper. And so that's kind of what's happening. But silver, as we discussed last time, silver's both a monetary metal and an industrial metal. And if you've got any Mandarin-speaking listeners, they would know that I think that the word for bank in Mandarin is silver house. So it's historically been silver's historically been man's money. But I mean, so silver isn't the same fair trade as gold, but it does always maintain some sort of ratio between gold. So it's playing massive catch up at the moment. But look, silver's been cooking for a little while and it keeps sort of going up to these resistance levels and then bouncing back down. And what happened this week was that silver broke through its resistance levels to 7-year highs. Mm-hmm. And it'd been bouncing up three times since about 2013, but it finally got there. What's happening in silver is that the COMEX markets, the silver future markets, the people who are investing in silver future contracts are taking delivery of the physical metal. Mm-hmm. Now, normally the futures investors would just let it roll over or they would let it lapse, but they're actually taking delivery of silver. So now there's all these concerns about whether there are more claims than there are silver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at kind of silver ETFs and silver holders, and the biggest owner of silver in the world is JP Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
It's so everyone, you know, these big institutions are buying silver. We know JP Morgan bought massive amounts of silver back in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a conversion away from paper into tangibles. But because gold has been moving for a couple of years and silver had been going down to sideways, I think silver just had a massive catch-up. So there's a lot of weird stuff happening in those futures markets. And because it's such a small market, it pops quickly.
In the last episode that we did on gold and silver, you mentioned that the, not target, but your predictions on the silver were that it can hit up to 100 bucks or more, right? Has that changed? And what sort of time frame are we talking here?
No, look, it hasn't changed. I mean, it's got a long way to go before it gets there. So, I don't want to put a time frame on it. But what we can say is that silver broke through its last resistance level. So the next resistance level for silver is $28. So it's at $23 now, which means it can probably get to 28 quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that makes, as John the investor gets nervous by that, I don't want any vertical moves. What I want to see is step higher. So it moves higher, it consolidates, it moves higher, it consolidates. So I want to see silver go up in an orderly fashion rather than in a sort of a vertical blow off top kind of situation where then it all ends in tears.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll happen, the big moves in silver, which aren't looking so crazy after all. I think, it, you know, 100 bucks in the next 4 years. It could be a lot sooner, but I'm thinking something like that. It's got to get through 50 bucks first. So 50 bucks is the all-time high twice. So it got to $50 briefly in 2011 and it got to $50 briefly in 1980. Mm-hmm. 1980 and 2011. So it's got to get through that again. There's going to be a lot of psychological resistance to get through 50 bucks. So we'll have to.
So the first key resistance level, according to you, is 28-odd-ish.
Yep.
And then 50 is the next resistance level that we're talking before we march any further.
Yeah, there's a few between 28 and 50, but I wouldn't
be surprised if it gets to 28 quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then it's sort of, it'll have to do a couple of things to break through. Right. But the other thing we didn't talk about is that a lot of the mines shut in April and May. So you had all this increased monetary demand, people wanting to buy gold coins and bars, mm-hmm. and gold and silver production went down by about 50% mm-hmm. because the mines were shut because of COVID. So, yeah, there's a lot of tailwinds.
Now, gold obviously hit the target of 1900, and it's pulled back a bit since. What are the charts looking like on gold when you look at the gold charts now?
Yeah, so if you look at a 10-year chart of gold in US dollar terms, it's doing a beautiful round U shape. So it's doing, if your listeners Google the cup and handle formation, it's doing a perfect cup and handle. Now the cup and handle is a very bullish pattern in technicals, and what it looks like is, if you can imagine a coffee mug, a two-dimensional coffee cup, and then it does a little dip, and that's the handle. So what we've done is we've done this big U shape, and this U shape is the cup part of the cup and handle. Now it's right up to its all-time highs. It's about, if I look at my phone, it's about $20 off its all-time high from 2011. What I think will happen, so a lot of people say, oh, it's going to blow through the all-time high. I don't think so. I think it's going to pull back from here and consolidate, and it's going to form that little handle, and we will see a drop for a couple of months. It'll circle back up, and then it'll go higher. And that's what a classic cup and handle looks like. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. Again, I think the wind is in the sails, but I'd be nervous if anything went vertical. For me, that's too soon. Like, I think it needs to grind higher over a couple of years so it can really do what gold is going to do without scaring anyone off.
I mean, commodities, there's other commodities as well, which is your likes of oil and copper. Are they correlated or are they not correlated?
There's some correlation, but it's minimal. So you've got things like your hard commodities like copper, other commodities used in industries, so they're hard commodities. Then you've got your precious metals, which it's more monetary really. So they're money alternatives. And then you know, oil, which is a mixture of both of them. You know, you've got soft commodities like wheat. So that they move, that they're both dug out of the ground, and they're both influenced by technology and mining and all those sorts of things. But generally speaking, the monetary metals, the precious metals, move a bit different to the industrial metals. Oil is oil gained about 5% over the last month, but actually it gained 10% really quickly, and it's actually pulled back quite sharply over the last couple of days. And of course, that's to do with fears about a second wave. So it was up 10% and it came back 5%, so it's up 5% overall. I think that oil's going to come back from here. I mean, I don't know, but I think oil will come back from here. I think partly fear, but I also think it got a bit overbought. And I think people are starting to question it. And you see this in the copper trade as well. So copper's a perfect V over the last 12 months. So it's dropped dramatically and it went up dramatically. And so, you know, copper's at 2018 levels. And the interesting thing about copper is the ultimate bellwether in terms of commodities. They call it Dr. Copper because you can look at the copper price and know all you need to know about the economy. Copper's pricing in a full recovery, but I'm not sure that that's where we're really at. Likewise, oil's in a pre-COVID price range. I don't know that it's going to stay there, but you know, if I look at inflation-adjusted commodities, oil's the cheapest thing on the planet. It's actually cheaper than silver, and silver's really cheap. So you know, those industrial commodities are suggesting that there's going to be a V-shaped recovery. There's starting to be some doubt in the oil and the copper charts, suggesting that maybe the market's got ahead of themselves and maybe there isn't such a V-shaped recovery. But we'll see. So I suspect both of those two commodities will go lower from here. And we'll see. The banks are highly leveraged to the oil price. So the really thing, oil is a very political commodity. So is gold, so silver, but oil is really political. Mm-hmm. And what you see is that, and it's not a widely spoken about correlation, but the banks, the big US banks, are correlated to the oil price. And that's partly because the banks invest a lot of capex into energy in the US. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of like sinister people think that, you know, they manipulate the oil price to keep the stock market higher because through the oil price they can get banking stocks higher. So look, I'm not sure about that at all, but it's an important commodity that is largely kept high.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the gold mining stocks?
Look, gold mining is a leveraged play into gold. So if you hold physical gold, it's just a plank of metal. It's just sits there and it appreciates sometimes and goes down other times. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're buying gold mining, you're getting that's a leveraged exposure. Now, over the last, I think it's like 20 years, gold miners have underperformed the metal. Mm-hmm. And the reason that the physical bars have outperformed gold is because you can't mismanage a gold bar. It just sits in a vault. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you run a mine, you can have industrial disputes and you can have wage problems and all sorts of stuff, and you can have flooding. And so generally speaking, gold mining is a tough business. It's usually in geographic areas that can be unstable, political mm-hmm. areas that are unstable. And so gold miners have really underperformed mm-hmm. the physical metal. Now, but gold miners is the way you can make a lot of money out of gold. So I personally am not invested in gold miners, although I, you know, perhaps wish I was, mm-hmm. because it's the way to make a fortune if you pick the right stock. Now, I'm not smart enough to pick the right stock, so I don't do that. But mm-hmm. it's a very leveraged way to get exposure to the gold price.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at a overall portfolio picture, John. Right, so there's real estate, then there's commodities, then there's some people are interested in crypto, there's crypto, right? And then there's obviously stocks, the big market. How do you structure the portfolio to decide what percentage is what? Or it's really dependent upon, it's a investor's risk appetite, it's almost impossible to answer kind of thing.
Yeah, look, there's an art to portfolio management. I'm not a portfolio guy. A lot of people, I mean, so the number that's bandied around usually is that gold should represent about 5 to 10% of a portfolio. Mm-hmm. And the reason you want gold in the portfolio is because it's countercyclical. So, you mm-hmm. know, when stocks are going up, gold's going down, and when there's a stock market crash, your gold bars go up. But the right percentage, there's a lot of scholarship that's gone into what the right percentage is, and I've heard as high as 35% is the optimal amount of precious metals. Mm-hmm. It feels a bit too high to me, but so I'm not sure. One way to look at, if you're constructing a portfolio, the one way to look at gold is it's just insurance. Like, it's just the thing that's going to go the opposite direction sharply mm-hmm. to all the other things you own. Now, investors like Warren Buffett, he doesn't like gold because it doesn't have a dividend, and I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. So as if you're an investor, I mean, how much of your portfolio do you want not to produce any cash flow? And mm-hmm. that's why it's usually only 5 or 10%, because it's like an alternative to just cash. So mm-hmm. 5 or 10% is usually what people talk about. Mm-hmm. Gold's very under-owned by portfolio and hedge fund managers. That's starting to change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I love real estate. So gold is a vehicle to get to real estate. If I think gold's undervalued, I'll buy it, but eventually I'll sell it to buy real estate.
And why is that the case? If the long-term prediction is that gold is going to outperform real estate, then why would you do that, essentially?
Because it won't always. Gold's very cyclical. I mean, real estate is too, but there will be a time when gold is overvalued and you'll want to switch out into, I don't know, equities or something like that. Whereas I don't really care where real estate is in the cycle. Mm-hmm. Real estate is permanently valuable, and sometimes it's sometimes it's expensive and sometimes it's cheap, but I actually don't care when it comes to real estate. I want to own it all the time. Mm-hmm. When gold is expensive, I don't want to own it. But real estate's, you know, a lot of people talk about, is now the right time to get into real estate? Well, if you don't have any, it's always the right time. Mm-hmm. Real estate's real estate. Gold's very cyclical, and I do care about the precious metal cycles in a way that I don't care about real estate cycles. I'm just happy to own it all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think partly the reason is gold is pretty liquid compared to real estate. Yeah. So it can have big swings, whereas real estate won't. So when you see the big swings, it's probably the time to – it gives you the opportunity to enter the market, take your money, and then move on.
Commodities are often overlooked when people are putting together their portfolios. You know, they buy their real estate, they get a couple of shares, and they've got their super fund. And they always forget about it. Robert Kiyosaki always talks about what true diversification looks like. So he always says that if you own shares and bonds and he calls them mutual funds or managed funds, that's a paper asset, a paper asset, and a paper asset, and you have no diversification. So the real way to get diversification is to own some paper assets, some commodities, some real estate, and so on. So I guess I'd say, look, it's important to look at risk and diversification differently. Mm-hmm. And commodities have an important place there. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd say is sometimes commodities are the best thing to own. And I think right now gold and silver are just in this cycle. And I don't know how long it's going to last, mm-hmm. but I think it's while there's a bit of fear around and while there's the monetary spigots are open, it's just one of those things that you really should look into. It's a very interesting space, mm-hmm. and it won't last forever.
Mm-hmm. Robert also promotes Bitcoin a lot these days. His bags are filled up with Bitcoin. So, but he hasn't managed to convince you on that part yet.
He hasn't, but he talks about them. He talks about gold, silver, Bitcoin as the arcs of safety. So I'm always open to it, but I haven't got there yet.
I'll just take a fun bet with you. So your prediction is that gold will outperform real estate in the next 5 years. Right. Which I think is very likely. Yeah, yeah. It's possible. Right. So I'll say Bitcoin will outperform gold in the next 5.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, look, I'm happy to take that bet. I'm happy to take that bet. Yeah, yeah. I mean, how interesting are we going to make it? You know, when you have these Bitcoin versus gold debates, they always bet the gold coin.
They both have got their space, I think, but one hasn't proven itself just yet. It's only 10 years old. The other one's centuries old. So it's not for a faint-hearted person.
You know, just on the gold versus real estate. So I think that in nominal terms, you know, I think gold will outperform real estate. And real estate's hard to say what is the real estate price. I mean, it's a market within markets. But the reason I said real estate is still the name of the game before is because what makes real estate difference is leverage. So no one's borrowing to buy their gold or Bitcoin. Well, that doesn't happen as much. But leverage is what makes real estate magic. Mm-hmm. So even though I think gold will outperform real estate's got that leverage attached, which is what makes it interesting, and it even magnifies small gains. So
yeah, still definitely. From a technical or from a chartist perspective, and we have said this before, none of this is a financial advice and none of us are professional chartists or anything, right? But cup and handle is like one pattern that you look at, and that's the one that it looks like currently is forming at the moment. Yeah. What other patterns do you normally look at?
Again, I'm not a very good chartist. I'm not a professional chartist, and so I only know a couple. What I personally look at, so there's the reverse head and shoulders and the head and shoulders. I'm looking for those things. Mm-hmm. I'm also looking for dead cat bounces, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a big crash, a recovery, and then a bigger crash. And so I'm looking to see if that happens to the stock market. Hasn't mm-hmm. happened yet, but mm-hmm. it so far could potentially have a dead cat bounce pattern. Mm-hmm. But what I mostly look at is a trend lines. Mm-hmm. So what's the trend? And is it bouncing up against a particular line over and over? And then I look at it to see if there's a like a corridor within it, it's bouncing up or down within a corridor. So they're the kind of patterns I look for. I'm starting to get more familiar with the ascending and descending wedges and like pendant formations and those sorts of things. I'm not good enough to know what to make of those things. And I should be really clear with your listeners. I'm not a trader. I'm a buy and hold guy. Mm. Eventually I'll sell my stuff, but, and I do look at, you know, the patterns closely, but I actually don't do anything with it. Mm. I just watch it and build up expectations in my own mind about where I think things are going to go, but I don't actually do anything with it. So I'm not a trader. Mm. Which is what your listeners to, yeah, to know that.
No, it's more of the entry point. It helps you with the entry points. That's all. So if you're planning to buy it, that was the whole point of bringing it up. That's really good, mate. We've covered a fair bit in the last half an hour, but for our listeners, none of this is financial advice. We're passing our knowledge and we're learning from other people. So don't take this as a financial advice. Enjoy your life and we'll see you guys soon again.